This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson in Washington. The Trump administration had said it would target thousands of undocumented families with raids starting this past weekend. Those raids have yet to materialize as far as we know, but something else has people talking. President Trump tweeted a racist attack against four Democratic lawmakers, all women of color, rekindling the seemingly never-ending debates over the president's rhetoric. Now, that tweet is worth discussing. But so too are the raids, the people they would affect, the fear growing in some immigrant communities, and the impact on the major cities targeted by the raids. Joining us to discuss that is NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez. Franco, welcome back to the program.
Great to be here.
Also joining us from NPR in New York is Jonathan Metzl, a sociology professor at Vanderbilt University. He's the author of Dying of Whiteness, How the Politics of Racial Resentment is Killing America's Heartland. Professor Metzl, welcome.
Thanks so much.
We also welcome your questions and thoughts about these raids, especially if you live in a part of the country where there are immigrant communities who are concerned about or perhaps preparing for what these raids will mean for them. So email us 1A@WAMU.org, comment on our Facebook page, or tweet us at 1A. Franco, let's just start with the nuts and bolts about these raids. What exactly was it that the president said was going to happen?
Well, what he said was going to happen was that starting yesterday, they were going to start launching sweeps of searching out about 2,000 unauthorized immigrants who had already surpassed their final orders of removal. That is, individuals who have already gone through the court proceedings and were already ordered to leave and had not left. So they were going to go search them out and bring them and deport them. But what we have found is we haven't seen any of this just yet.
I just want to underscore what you just said, Franco. The people who are supposedly going to be targeted by these raids are people who already have orders of deportation, people who could lawfully be deported regardless.
Yes, that's absolutely correct. I will add, though, the Trump administration's top aides did say if they come across other individuals, family members, loved ones who are not in, who are also here undocumented, they could also be subject to being taken into custody and eventually deported as well.
Is this the kind of thing that happens on a regular basis, but we just don't notice it because Donald Trump wasn't president? Or is this really an unusual kind of a raid?
Well, it definitely does happen on a regular basis. However, certainly with the, with President Trump and heightening it, using his platform to announce these raids, talking about, using language like we're going to go after millions of undocumented immigrants, plans to go after going after these individuals. But also because he's talking about, the administration has been talking about families. In the past, previous administrations have focused and said they will use kind of prosecutorial discretion to go after only those who have committed major crimes or national security threats. The Trump administration has more openly said, look, we are going to go after our priority as criminals, but we will also target those people who have arrived recently, including families.
Now, we should be clear, Franco, we haven't seen evidence yet that these raids have begun to materialize. Doesn't mean they haven't started. We just don't know about them yet. But what does the timeline look like, as best we know, going forward? Do we still expect these raids to materialize? Was this just political rhetoric? What's the best expectation so far?
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely correct. We have not seen much. Certain mayors, Mayor de Blasio in New York said he confirmed a couple of cases where there were ICE agents out pursuing individuals, but it's unclear whether they actually found the people they were looking for. But look, President Trump and his administration said it would start on Sunday and go through the week. Some of his top officials, including the USCIS director, Cuccinelli, or acting director, has said they will happen. So I think just because they didn't happen yesterday does not mean that they won't happen. They could be now trying to be like telegraph this a little bit less than they have in the past.
Put this in the context of everything else, Franco, that's going on with the administration in terms of immigration policy. There are the changing policies at the border. We've still got the issue of these migrant detention centers, then the conditions there. Where does that sit kind of in the larger scheme of things as it relates to the president's immigration plans?
I mean, I think it shows that the President Trump's focus on, you know, enforcing immigration laws continues to be a major priority. He continues to use this issue as something that he wants to focus on policy-wise as well as political-wise. We cannot deny, ignore that there is a presidential election coming next year, and both sides, Democrats and Republicans, are both kind of lining up their bases, lining up their issues. Immigration for President Trump was perhaps the issue that he kind of made his name on when he, you know, in 2015 and 2016 when he wrote it to the White House, and he is continuing to use that. In addition, there is also obviously some frustration for President Trump and the Trump administration because the border numbers have, you know, began to increase again. And there is, you know, many will say a crisis on the border that needs to be addressed. And there's no certain way to how to address that. And both sides, Democrats and Republicans, are just continuing to fight over it.
Before I come to Professor Metzl about the tweet that the president sent over the weekend, Franco, if you could just bring us up to speed on what the president wrote, what he tweeted, and what the reaction's been.
Well, President Trump tweeted over the weekend about four progressive Democrats. He kind of injected himself into a battle that they had been having with their own party leaders about saying that they should go back to the country that they were originally from. It's very important to note that these were American citizens and almost all of them were born in the United States. You know, he did not mention names, but he was talking about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Representative Ilhan Omar, also Rashida Tlaib, as well as Representative Ayanna Pressley. You know, these are members of Congress, U.S. citizens, and three of the four were born in the United States.
Yeah, we should note Ayanna Pressley, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Rashida Tlaib are native-born, natural-born U.S. citizens. Congresswoman Ilhan Omar was born in Mogadishu, Somalia, and her family emigrated to the United States, and she became a naturalized citizen. Now, Franco, the president kind of doubled down on this. He's been tweeting just in the 15 minutes before we went on the air, referring to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and this crowd as, in his words, a bunch of communists, referring to Border Patrol agents. At least he says they refer to them as concentration camp guards, calling them anti-America and anti-Semitic, and also saying basically that they owe him and the American people an apology.
Yeah, he is absolutely calling for an apology from them. I mean, it's very interesting to watch. He is absolutely doubling, if not tripling down. He has sent several tweets this morning, you know, referring to them as the radical left, and welcoming this as an issue to be decided at the ballot box in 2020. So I think there's no question that this is something that is going to be continued to discuss.
And just to be clear, those latest few tweets from the last 15 minutes, he's quoting Lindsey Graham, who appeared this morning on Fox and Friends. So he is attributing that to Lindsey Graham and indeed includes Lindsey Graham's Twitter handle at the end of that thread. Professor Metzl, let me come to you. Take these two things, these threats of the ICE raids, which may yet materialize, may be going on right now, for all we know, and these latest tweets, the kind of go back where you came from tweets. Do these intersect in your mind? And if so, how?
Well, absolutely. I think that President Trump, in very nefarious ways, has been very effective in speaking to his base and creating this kind of us versus them, we're under attack from them kind of zero-sum approach to politics, to race, to immigration. And what's interesting for me is that what that does, it happens on several levels. On one hand, of course, there are very real material consequences of these, not just the immigration policies, but the cruelty that this is going about with, that's creating really layers on layers of trauma. Immigration itself is traumatizing enough, but what's happening now is incredibly cruel and needlessly so. But the other part, I think that's exactly right, that you can't really see this outside the context of the 2020 election. And really what he's doing is speaking to his base and the people that he feels like got him into the White House in the first place, and saying basically that we're not going to compromise about these issues. I guess the frustrating part for me, I've been doing research in the South for the past, you know, 6-7 years leading up to the book that I just had come out. And when I started doing my research, there were a lot of people who were who cared deeply about immigration, but were, you know, what would be considered now centrists. You know, I support DACA. I want, you know, secure borders, factors like that. And what I feel like President Trump is effectively doing with all of these actions is basically saying there's no room in the middle. You're either with them or you're with us.
Worth noting, though, Professor, that there are plenty of people who are more focused on what they'd like the president to do with regards to immigration. One of our listeners, Mike, emailed, 63 million voted for Trump to fix the immigration debate.
Well, I think that's right. I mean, so I think that's a fair question. Is what's happening now going to fix the immigration system, right? I mean, we've had multiple, you know, going back to the Bush years and Clinton, Obama, at least attempts. DACA itself came out of a seemingly kind of bipartisan push to create some kind of middle ground. And so I think it's fair to ask, is what's happening now fixing the immigration system, or is it polarizing people, pushing them into more extreme positions and making it harder for us to come together on a consensus?
I do want to talk further about that when we continue. And just for the sake of context, it is worth noting that, yes, 63 million people did vote for Donald Trump in the 2016 election. 66 million voted for Hillary Clinton. So just by way of context. We'll continue in just a moment with Vanderbilt Professor Jonathan Metzl and NPR's Franco Ordonez. We'll hear more from you about what this means in your community. Also got word that the Trump administration plans to make some changes for asylees from Central America. We'll talk about that, and we'll get to some more of your questions and comments as well. 1A@WAMU.org. I'm Joshua Johnson, glad to be with you, and you're listening to 1A from WAMU and NPR. This is 1A. I'm Joshua Johnson. We're discussing the climate of fear that's been generated by the president's threatened immigration raids and compounded by his past and present racially charged tweets with NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez and sociologist Jonathan Metzl of Vanderbilt University. We'd love to hear from you, too. Comment on our Facebook page, tweet us at 1A, or email 1A@WAMU.org. Before we move on from those tweets, we're focusing on the immigration part of this today. But we know that that tweet bears more discussion, especially the go back where you came from part. It's one of the oldest dog whistles in our politics. Now, Mr. Trump's critics say that his supporters will stick with him no matter how outrageous he is, no matter how bigoted he is. And we would like to test that argument. So we'd love your help for tomorrow's program. If you support President Trump politically, how do these latest tweets square with that support? Leave us a voicemail, 855-236-1A1A. Now, perhaps the president's rhetoric has weakened your support for his reelection. Maybe it plays little or no role in your decision to vote for him next November. Maybe you agree with what he tweeted. In any case, tell us your story, 855-236-1A1A. Or you can leave us a radio-quality audio file through our app, 1A Vox Pop. We'll share some of your stories tomorrow. Franco, before we get to some more comments from listeners, we got word this morning that the administration plans to end asylum protections for most Central American migrants. What more do we know about that?
Well, we know that the administration is moving forward with a tough new asylum rule. The effort is to kind of to slow the flow of Central American migrants crossing the border. Under this rule, immigrants who seeking asylum would need to do so first in the country they enter rather than at the U.S. border. It's very likely that this will be quickly challenged in courts. Statute says that there must be a safe third-party agreement. That means that that the country has agreed to kind of allow asylum asylees to apply there. But there is another part of the statute that says that you can add conditions. So it's going to be which one does the court pick?
Yeah, didn't we already go through this? I mean, this was part of the negotiations with the Mexican government not too long ago to prevent tariffs on Mexico from the U.S. This is part of, if memory serves, this was part of that deal that led to Mexico basically creating a National Guard to police its southern border, right?
Yeah, I mean, yes, the United States has really been trying to strong arm many of these Latin America countries. You mentioned Mexico to be these kind of safe third party countries. The Trump administration says that Mexico actually agreed to do this and that they're in the process of doing it. But there are a lot of questions of whether they actually agreed to it or they agreed to negotiate to do this. Guatemala also was in the process of talking with the Trump administration about being kind of a safe area for this. But those conversations appear to have at least temporarily fallen apart. The president of Guatemala, Jimmy Morales, was actually supposed to be coming into town this week, and that meeting was canceled when Guatemala said that they would not be a third-party safe country.
Plenty of great questions and comments from our listeners. And Professor Metzl, I wonder if you could start with Rebecca in Cleveland. Rebecca emailed, "Once again, Trump is manipulating and distracting from the fact that these so-called raids are not actually happening by making these inflammatory tweets, and his supporters and the press lap it up." Professor?
Well, I think it's a fair point that it's just remarkable for me in this question of immigration and everything else we're talking about now, how much we're having the conversation really on his terms. And so, you know, of course, the press, when you know, the provocations get more and more outlandish leading to these tweets over the weekend and today. But what happens is it's not so much that the press is being manipulated. It's that when we're having conversations about these very extreme positions, we lose an opening to create a better conversation that might be a more unifying conversation. So I think it really presents the Democrats and the press with a kind of moral choice, right? I mean, how is it possible to have a conversation right now about what immigration does for our country, about the strength of our country being built on immigration, about our responsibility as a superpower to take care of people in times of need? Is there a space to even have that conversation? And so in a way, I think that, you know, it's hard to do it when the president is so good at creating these moments of fire and tension and factors like that. And I really think that's one of the issues for the 2020 election is how can we have a different kind of conversation about immigration and how can that be promoted in spite of what the president is doing to derail it?
Franco, if you could respond to Richard, who emailed, "Please address the issue of personal responsibility and accountability for immigrants who bring their children and ignore the lawful orders of the United States. The law which governs citizens of the United States and how they have the ability to ignore these laws and appear to be oblivious to the consequences if they are found in violation of our laws." Franco?
I mean, it's a difficult question. Obviously, the United States has borders, and you know, you talk to different, heads of top aides, whether it's the Obama Trump administration or the Obama administration, that you need to protect the borders of the United States. This caller talks about bringing over families and personal responsibility. You know, you do have to note that some of these families are coming from countries that are in very difficult situations. I don't know, you know, it's a case by case, you know, circumstance where some of these families are fleeing violence, fleeing extreme poverty. There are obviously, though, other cases where they're fleeing economic reasons. Then you have the other issue of, you know, the United States has essentially provided jobs for these individuals for many time. They've needed immigrant workers. So there has been kind of somewhat of a magnet for immigrants to come into the United States. And the United States has yet to figure out a way to bring in the workers it needs in a legal fashion, hence why we're seeing a lot of this illegal migration and the problems that we're coming with today.
Although we should be clear, Franco, and correct me if I'm wrong, but bringing your children across the border without documentation is not inherently illegal if you are applying for asylum. There are circumstances in which someone can just cross the border and say, "I am applying for asylum," and the law allows for that, right?
Absolutely. If you are coming to the border and you are fleeing, persecution, fleeing in danger, you can come to the United States and apply for asylum. Just the fact to come and apply for asylum is not against the law. So you can do that. Now, the Trump administration will respond that it is too easy to come and apply for asylum and then be brought into the court system and therefore get, you know, into a system that takes years and years and years, that people are eventually released into the interior of the country, that kind of frustrates the administration. But yes, absolutely, it is not against the law to come and apply for asylum.
Although we should be clear, if you apply for asylum and your application is rejected and the government says, sorry, you have to go back to your country of origin, and you don't leave, that is illegal and you can be deported.
Correct.
Jose tweeted, these raids are topping the issues of anxiety already here in La Frontera. Nuestros abuelos y abuelas, our grandfathers and grandmothers, are even bringing up the raids on braceros, or manual laborers, by President Eisenhower with its demeaning name, Operation Wetback. How sad that history seems to echo in these ways. Professor Metzl, what do you think of Jose's comment? Is history echoing here?
I think that's exactly right. I mean, what we forget is not only our own history about, you know, a history that we've in some ways fought very hard to overcome of what we've done to people who come here to work or in times of need, but also just how people get to this country. I mean, my own family escaped the Holocaust, and the U.S. was a beacon of hope, a kind of moral, a moral beacon in a certain kind of way. And so in a way, I do think that whether or not the numbers add up, I mean, certainly there have been many other administrations that have deported people in different ways, but just the absolute cruelty and racism that's been happening in the, you know, we see it very boldly in the tweets, but from a system on down, you know, there's a very dehumanizing nature, not just about the immigration debate, but also, for example, the census question. You know, who counts as a human? Who counts enough to be counted? What President Trump is doing with military families, not protecting their families from ICE raids, for example. You know, what's happening with DACA? So there are all these layers of really trying to get people to not see immigrants as human, and it unfortunately leads to back to a history that is one of the worst parts of American history, and one that, again, we fought hard to overcome.
Yeah, with regards to the census question, Franco, Anthony in Birmingham tweeted, while it may be easy to paint me as paranoid, it seems that the Trump administration's need for a citizenship question on the census, coupled with ICE raids in predominantly Democratic areas, could result in a Republican power move, that Republicans are moving to control America for the next 10 years. Franco, I've heard plenty of people talk about, say, judicial appointments as a part of President Trump's lasting legacy, federal judges, Supreme Court justices. I've not really heard a lot of people talk about immigration policy as kind of a longer-term Republican policy play.
Yeah, I mean, this is not as discussed as much as kind of like the judiciary reform or the judiciary changes that President Trump is trying to install. But certainly it is a major issue for President Trump in regards to the question and the citizenship question. That is absolutely a concern of many Democrats who see this as specifically a political play to kind of boost the number of, you know, kind of support for Republican districts. If you can identify who are the citizens, the feeling is that more resources, more funding, taxpayer money will go to those communities that have citizenship, that have more citizens. Therefore, you could write districts that are also more prone to Republican, you know, Republican supported districts, because many of the minority districts will be Democratic.
Professor Metzl, I guess this is one of those interesting policy debates that, you know, depending on how you kind of view things, you could slice this in a number of ways. I mean, Border Patrol has said, and ICE has said, that they are actually legitimately overwhelmed on the border. They don't have the people, they don't have the resources, they don't have the, but they are being overrun. There's also this rhetoric from the president. So I don't know. I guess in some ways this might be kind of a Rorschach test.
Well, I've been amazed in my own research over the past, you know, 5, 6, 7 years, just how deeply people in middle America and in the South really care about this issue of immigration. I think people are starting to wake up to it now, but, you know, to their own detriment in some cases. You know, I did interviews with people who were medically ill and really would have benefited from the Affordable Care Act. But the minute they started getting the message incorrectly at the time that some of those healthcare resources might go to help immigrants, they were willing to you know, forego their own medical treatment not to sign up for this system. I interviewed people who were willing to support cuts to the education system that their own kids' schools attended when the message came through that immigrant children might also be benefiting from the school system. And so there's such a deep fear of this kind of threat of immigration that is, you know, rife in particular parts of the country. And I really think it's an issue that ties to why President Trump is acting the way he is right now. If he can paint all Democrats as being, you know, for open borders and no process and all these kind of things, it plays right into these real mortality mandates, these fears that people have that immigration is the end of their own life, and it makes it harder to create some kind of middle ground.
And so, Professor, I just want to – I don't want to overstate this, but I want to make sure we're clear on the point that you're making, because, you know, there are plenty of Trump supporters who will say, I just agree with the policies and not with the rhetoric.
Sure.
It sounds like what you're saying is that once the rhetoric marries with this idea of policy, that people will not just double down, they'll flip and they'll say, oh, well, in that case, I feel the other way.
And just that the idea that there is a centrist position becomes more impossible. I mean, I've also interviewed many people who were basically just had very practical concerns, job market competition, factors like that, or resources in a system that is resource poor. And whether or not I agreed with the people I was interviewing, it wasn't like they were saying all of these horrible things. But what happens when it's so rife with this kind of fear and anger and xenophobia is that it just makes it impossible for people in the center to think about even imagining some kind of solution.
We got plenty of stories from several of you about what this means for you in your community, how people are increasingly apprehensive or worried. Here is just one of the voicemails, the many voicemails that landed in our inbox.
My name is Tom, and I live outside of Nashville, Tennessee. However, I did spend 20 years in Oakland, California, and I'll never forget when my next-door neighbor, who was undocumented, a woman with children, I found her in the laundry room terrorized because the police had come because of a domestic incident in her home. She was afraid that they would deport her. And the police in Oakland at that time assured her they would not do that. They just wanted to get her story. This was probably 15 years ago, different climate entirely, but I'll never forget the terror in this poor woman's demeanor.
Tom, thank you for sharing your story with us. Franco, is there anything that's been going on with the administration to try to educate cities about what's going on, what is happening, debunking myths, answering questions, easing the fears? Has there been any kind of effort like that that we know of?
Well, certainly in cities, you know, say New York and different cities, there are certainly mayors, many of whom are in opposition of the Trump administration. For example, Mayor de Blasio, he has been tweeting a lot about the rights that immigrants have, in many cases kind of echoing some of the support that advocates are providing in regards to what you can and can't do, what law enforcement agents can and can't do. For example, not having to open your doors if agents are knocking on your door unless they have a warrant or a record for you. So there is certainly, you know, depending on what side of the aisle you're on, whether the persuasion, whether you support or don't support President Trump, there are certainly those kind of steps that are happening. It's very interesting to watch.
And before we let you go, Franco, what's the next step in all this? What should we be keeping an eye out for now?
Well, I think we definitely need to keep an eye out to see how the Trump administration follows through with these talk of raids and immigration sweeps. I mean, we have not seen them yet, but that does not mean that they're not going to happen. They're not going to continue. And there's a lot of concern that who are they going to be arresting? Are they going to be going after families? Are we going to see children being taken into custody? And there's big questions about that.
And as far as I know, Franco, I haven't heard much from Democrats yet about anything to directly oppose these raids or to push back. This is immigration is pretty much within the president's purview.
At this point, it is very largely in the executive branch. But there's no question that Democrats are pushing back in any and every way that they can.
That's NPR White House correspondent Franco Ordonez. Franco, thanks very much.
Thank you.
And Vanderbilt University sociologist Jonathan Metzl. His book is called Dying of Whiteness: How the Politics of Racial Resentment is Killing America's Heartland. Professor, thanks very much.
Thanks so much.
As we mentioned, this is affecting major cities across the country. We will get the story from Los Angeles and Chicago, including from Chicago's mayor, when we continue. Stay close. Let's explore now how a few major cities are reacting to these planned raids, beginning with Chicago. Joining us from Chicago is its mayor, Lori Lightfoot. Chicago is one of 10 major cities that ICE was expected to target this weekend. Mayor Lightfoot was recently named chair of the U.S. Conference of Mayors Criminal and Social Justice Committee. On Friday, she ordered Chicago police to not cooperate with ICE on these raids. Mayor Lightfoot, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You wrote an open letter to the president that landed in the Washington Post yesterday, I believe, where you noted that the city of Chicago has approximately 180,000 undocumented people living and working there. Paint us a clearer picture of that population.
Well, it really is people from all over the world. We obviously have a fair number of people from Mexico and also other parts of Central America, but we also have people who come to us from literally every continent in the world, Africa and Asia, and Europeans as well.
What kinds of challenges does that present to you as a mayor and to Chicago city government in terms of dealing with that undocumented population?
Well, the one unifying theme that the threat of these immigration raids has done is to galvanize people on the ground in all of these neighborhoods with the theme of making sure that we educate people about what their rights are. We have people on the ground. They call themselves community navigators. Some of that is funded by city dollars and private dollars. But they are really people in neighborhoods who are rising up to say that I want to do everything I can to help and support my neighbors who have different status from me.
Give me an example of what that kind of support might look like.
Well, I can point to a 12-year-old girl who got motivated to get involved because she was concerned about her father being a possible target of deportation. And she's now enlisted not only herself, but other people of her age, her cousins, who are going door-to-door educating people about what their rights are.
Give me a sense of what you at the city of Chicago were told by the government, what kind of communication there was, if any, when these raids were announced. Did anyone from ICE or Border Patrol or any part of the federal government reach out to the mayor's office and say, hey, here's what you can expect?
No, not surprisingly, they haven't reached out to us to tell us anything. We've been getting bits and pieces that have kind of leached out over time. But what we've seen so far is very little activity in the city of Chicago, knock on wood. But we're telling people they need to remain diligent. And as I mentioned, the benefit of this action is really galvanize people at the grassroots level to understand the necessity of making sure people are educated about what their rights are.
So you, as far as you can tell, you've not seen or heard of any activity on these raids that's taken place in Chicago yet, right?
There's been a lot of rumors, but we've been chasing them down. And so far, very little in the way of substantiation and nothing where we've been able to say somebody's been arrested and then put into the deportation portal.
We're speaking to Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. We'd also love to hear from you, your questions and thoughts, 1A@WAMU.org. Now, I wonder whether local authorities in Chicago have any level of cooperation with these raids or with these enforcement actions that is on the table. You had noted that Chicago police will not be assisting in the raids. One of our listeners in Virginia Beach, Ray, emailed, "Sanctuary cities will not assist ICE in the arrest of illegals that have deportation orders. Many of those illegals have criminal records. They will, though, arrest U.S. citizens that have arrest warrants, many of which have children. Not much reading there." Back in November 2016, Mayor Rahm Emanuel affirmed Chicago as a sanctuary city. Is Chicago still considered a sanctuary city?
Chicago is very much a sanctuary city and will remain so during my tenure as mayor. We are doing everything we can to be a support for our neighbors who are in need. The warm touch of somebody coming to your home that you know and you trust, just to check in, to help you educate your rights, but also just to make sure that you're attending to your basic needs. We have people who are literally afraid to leave their homes. So our neighbors are making sure that people have groceries, that bills are getting paid. And we as a city are also sending out the word to employers that in these very difficult times, we would take a dim view of any employer who took away the employment of somebody who didn't show up because they were in fear of an ICE raid.
What does that mean in practical terms? Take a dim view of that employer. What might that look like?
What it means is that we are telling employers you cannot and should not fire anyone because they don't come to work under these difficult circumstances. We're encouraging employers to be in contact with their employees, their colleagues, to understand what their situation and status is. Our business community, particularly our hospitality community, has really been terrific in that regard and going the extra mile in providing support and education to the business community. But we're going to push hard to make sure that people are not doubly penalized because they are living in fear of the president's potential actions.
I'd love to know your sense of just the mood around Chicago in anticipation of all of this. Annie wrote on our Facebook page, "I'm Chicana and a third-generation Midwesterner. My spouse is an immigrant from Ireland. Guess which one of us regularly receives questions about nationality? Hint, it's not my spouse." Mm-hmm. Mayor Lightfoot, what's the mood around Chicago like right now?
I think people are sad and fearful. And anxious, but also motivated to really fight back. All those range of emotions are present on the ground in neighborhoods that I've visited, and people are concerned and they're afraid. They're afraid for themselves, their family members, and it's particularly affecting our children. In many instances, the children may be the only English language speaker in a household. So we have kids as young as my daughter, 11, 12, 13 years old, shouldering this very adult responsibility of translating for their family members what's going on the ground, making sure that people know their rights. But that's a very, very heavy burden for children to have to bear. And I want to make sure that people understand the trauma that that's imposing upon people across generations.
If I may, a few more questions before I let you go. Speak to those folks across the country who are trying to understand why Chicago would defend undocumented immigrants, people who could rightfully be deported. I'm sure that there are people who are thinking if someone has broken the law by remaining in the United States without proper documentation, then they should be removed from the city of Chicago. Surely Chicago has bigger and better things to worry about. Undocumented immigrants who aren't supposed to be there use city resources that cost the city money. Chicago has enough fiscal problems to deal with on its own. It would make sense for a big city like Chicago, with other things to deal with legally resident Chicagoans to take care of, to get rid of those people who aren't supposed to be there. What would you say to them?
Well, the people that are the target of the president and ICE are our friends. They're our neighbors. Chicago is a city of immigrants. We will always remain a city of immigrants. We have people that have come to us literally from every corner of the globe, and we have to stand united with our neighbors and our friends. And to your point that people may be saying, well, don't you have other things to worry about? I turn the question around and say to the president, of all the things that are challenging us as a nation, don't you have bigger things to worry about? Don't you think that it's important for us to work on solving poverty, dealing with crime, dealing with hunger? There's so many things that we should be uniting around, solving together with the leadership of and resources of the federal government. These things that divide us and try to demonize our neighbors. As an African-American woman, I know that pendulum could swing immediately in my direction. Look at the history of our country. So for me, this is mission critical that we stand united with the people in our communities who contribute mightily to the vibrancy of our community and to our economy. We have to stand united with them.
And in the event, God forbid, in the event that there is a case like, say, the Kate Steinle case in San Francisco, where an undocumented immigrant who was on the list for deportation, who had a long rap sheet, ended up killing a young woman at Fisherman's Wharf. In the event that one of these undocumented immigrants who the city is trying to actively defend turns out to be far more trouble than they were worth, what then?
Well, let's be clear. The focus of this latest raid of ICE isn't anybody that falls into a documented criminal who's wanted on a warrant. In those instances, of course, the rule of law has to be followed. But what we're doing is targeting children. We're targeting people who have come to this country in search of a better life, who are contributing, otherwise law-abiding citizen residents. So let's be clear about who we're talking about. We're not talking about people who are wreaking havoc. We're talking about good neighbors who go to work, who pay their taxes, and are doing everything that they can to support themselves and their families and adding to the vibrancy of our community.
Lori Lightfoot is the mayor of Chicago. Mayor Lightfoot, we really appreciate your time. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Thank you.
Before our time is up, let's add one more voice from Southern California. Joining us from KPCC in Los Angeles is reporter Leslie Berenstein Rojas, who reports on immigration. Leslie, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Now, LA's Mayor Eric Garcetti released a video to immigrants in and around Los Angeles. Here is a piece of that video.
Most importantly, I want you to know you do not need to be afraid. Your city is on your side. And rest assured, here in Los Angeles, we are not coordinating with ICE. For us, this isn't partisan politics. It's about being a good neighbor. It's about who we are as Angelenos and who we should always be as Americans. And we will never let fear and intimidation win the day. We are in this together. And we believe that Los Angeles and the United States are places where every family should remain together, where everyone should feel safe, and where everybody belongs.
That's part of a video from L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti. Talk about what's going on, Leslie, around Southern California in response to these planned raids.
Well, like Mayor Lightfoot said, it's been very similar in Los Angeles. There's been a whole lot of organizing, a whole lot of outreach. In fact, I mean, President Trump first began tweeting about there being raids more than 3 weeks ago. There were supposed to be raids, 3 weeks ago, then that was canceled, and it was supposed to happen this weekend. It hasn't really panned out. So what it's done in the meantime is it's given all the immigrant advocacy organizations, and we have quite a few here, time to go out and tell people, hey, here's what you have to do. You don't have to open the door unless somebody has a warrant signed by a judge. Go ahead and make contingency plans. Make sure there's somebody around to take care of your kids. Get some legal advice. So that's been happening in the meantime.
Yeah, with regards to that, we heard from some of our listeners who were involved in efforts to try to help immigrants deal with these raids. Alex wrote on our Facebook page, "I'm a white American citizen, and I believe that immigrants make America great. They enrich our communities and broaden our views. Trump's ICE raids make me furious and our communities less safe. As an immigrant ally, I'm attending rapid response training in D.C. so that I can assist immigrants if raids happen, recording their interaction and guarding their rights." That's kind of similar to something from your reporting. Let me play a quick clip of Jorge Mario Cabrera. He's with a group called the Coalition for Humane Immigrants' Rights of Los Angeles. It's a local immigrant advocacy group that's been doing some Know Your Rights outreach. Here's a clip of them talking about the effects of the announcement of these raids.
We have condemned the president for causing chaos and anxiety in the community, but we also want to thank the president for allowing us to expand our education campaign for community members to know what their rights are.
Leslie, how are advocates preparing undocumented people and their families for all this?
You know, the Know Your Rights campaigns is a big part of it, right? In fact, Jorge Mario is one of the folks I've been in touch with all weekend trying to figure out what's going on. If they're hearing any reports of, anybody getting arrested. And the majority of calls that they're getting is from people wanting to know what to do if agents come to their door. And so that is basically the main focus. You know, that people are flyering, people are, talking to, kind of immigrants who work with the advocacy groups to go out in their communities and kind of spread the word to tell people. Because ICE agents typically come with administrative warrants, right, which don't really, make somebody have to open the door to let them in. They do have to have a judicial warrant signed by a judge in order to force their way in, for you to have to let them in. So they're letting people know that. And in addition, for the last 3 weeks plus, actually for a longer time, but really ever since the president became very actively talking about this, starting on Twitter, people have been calling in. People have been wanting to know, how do I get prepared? So, you have had organizations like CHRLA who are getting people and having legal consultations as to, what do I do if something happens? So that really has, been a big push from the advocacy groups. At the same time, there still has been a big chilling effect, right? I mean, you know, just yesterday I called around to various businesses, you know, in areas that are, you know, like, you know, frequented stores, businesses, you know, restaurants where Central American migrants, Mexican immigrants go to. And, you know, business has been down in some places. Other places said not so much. But churches, you know, we did a story on a church here locally where, you know, attendance was down by about half on a Sunday than what you would regularly see for Mass. So you do have people staying put.
Southern California is a diverse place, and California can be a somewhat diverse place politically. You know, what people feel in L.A. might be different than what's felt in Orange County or further south in San Diego or certainly further east in the Central Valley. And I imagine there are different perspectives on all of this. I mean, some would point to, say, the Kate Steinle case in San Francisco. Others would remind us that, yes, the undocumented immigrant who was accused of murdering her was charged with murder but only convicted on felony gun possession. What about the diversity of views on this? Is everyone unanimous in disliking these raids, or is there a little more nuance?
Oh, of course not. No, there is nuance. I mean, you know, you mentioned the Inland Empire. You know, that's, you know, place Orange County. And even in Los Angeles proper, there are people who think that this is fine. I mean, you know, and true. I mean, depending on what the president says, right, because at first it was supposed to be families, you know, Central American asylum seekers, those were the reports, who had an order of deportation. Then later on this past week, he was tweeting about, you know, people who were criminals. So it's a little bit confusing. But if you're going after people who have outstanding orders of deportation, you know, definitely you have people who say, well, then they're, you know, they're fair game. The other side of that, though, is, of course, you know, because especially now with the crush of asylum seekers, it's been, you know, a little bit chaotic. A lot of people don't necessarily have proper notification of court hearings. And so you have had a lot of people that have been ordered in absentia. So that kind of, you know, also shades that argument. But definitely you have people who support ICE arresting and deporting anyone who has an outstanding order.
And very briefly, Leslie, any sense of what may happen from here? Does anybody have any idea when these raids might begin, briefly?
You know, no one does. No one has any idea. I mean, look, the morning is still young here. Doesn't mean we may not see more enforcement this week, but it would be with less fanfare because, you know, it's not to say that ICE needs a raid to arrest anyone. I mean, you know, ICE does arrest people they're looking for on a regular basis in smaller numbers. It's not just this administration either. Typically, it's not announced in advance.
That's KPCC immigration reporter Leslie Berenstain Rojas. Leslie, thanks very much.
Thank you.
This conversation was produced by Bianca Martin. To learn more about our team, visit the1a.org/staff. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Joshua Johnson. Thanks for listening. This is 1A.